Welcome to the Whole Paradox Podcast, where we explore timeless wisdom in the modern age to cultivate a greater sense of meaning and belonging to ourselves, our world, and one another. We will integrate the sacred, mythic, somatic, creative, and poetic to expand our meaning of truth and our capacity for complexity and nuance. To give us context for the cultural milieu we find ourselves in, currently mired in global conflict, having just experienced a worldwide pandemic, and living through climate crisis, just to name a few, I find solace in looking to the ancient wisdom of our ancestors. And for me, this often leads me back to the question, what existed before the social and cultural system of the patriarchy? Now, Rhianne Eisler, who wrote The Chalice and the Blade, explained that in the culture of Indo-Europe during the Neolithic era, approximately 7,000 to 3,500 BCE, women participated in many leadership roles within the communities they inhabited, and the social structure was evidenced to be matrilineal, meaning the familial lineage appeared to be traced through the mother, and matrilocal, meaning husbands would join the wife's family upon marriage. This makes me think about the tradition of taking on a husband's last name. My name is hyphenated growing up, and I always loved that my parents chose to do that. But I think about that as well. And ultimately, both names are still through the patrilineal lineage. So it makes me think, how far back do I have to go to arrive at a name that comes from a matrilineal lineage? Maybe we should just make up our own last names at this point. Anyway, I digress. In addition, the insights from more recent archaeological data show that pre-patriarchal society was peaceful and equalitarian. There's a lot of evidence that not only was it peaceful, but the arts and creativity flourished. And there was not the same subordination of men as there was later of women under patriarchy. As shown in Professor of Art History Merlin Stone's book, When God Was a Woman, Hebrew law around 1300 to 1250 BCE declared that a woman was to be stoned or burned to death for losing her virginity before marriage, and that upon being the victim of rape, a single woman was forced to marry the rapist. If she was already betrothed or married, she was to be stoned to death for having been raped. Stone stated that before this time, there never had been a similar law written in the Near East, a fact that may show the beginnings of a rising brutality and control over women during this time. Now, there are differing views on what happened to these pre-patriarchal goddess-worshipping societies, right? Like, what the heck happened if things seemed so idyllic? Now, according to Eisler, in the 5th millennium BCE, nomadic warrior tribes began to invade the peace-loving, goddess-worshipping people of Indo-Europe. Of the warrior nomads, Eisler said, quote, "The one thing they all have in common was a dominator model of social organization, a social system in which male dominance, male violence, and a generally hierarchic and authoritarian social structure was the norm." This always brings me back to this question, though, of, you know, what created the original impulse for violence? And is that just within us? I would say yes. And what causes it to come forward? And then it, you know, has me circle around this question of trauma. And trauma inflicted upon us and the impact of trauma being inflicted upon us, as we know the intergenerational link that it moves down at least through three generations. So I think we also need to acknowledge that other changes were occurring at this time. Philosopher Ken Wilber had a different take, as he explained in his book, Sex, Ecology, and Spirituality. According to Wilber, in previously horticultural societies, women produced most of the food for their people, and as a result, the deities of their societies were female, and they shared power in the public sphere with men. Wilber accounts for the shift in social structure as precipitated by the shift in the use of the plow over the handheld hoe. Wilber stated, "When the plow was invented, men took up virtually all the productive work. The matrifocal modes of production gave way to patrifocal modes, and the reigning deity figures switched from Great Mother to Great Father Focus. In this view, the shift had entirely to do with a shift in food production as opposed to warring nomadic invaders. Whereas in Isler's perspective, these nomadic invaders brought their social structure of violence, male domination, and male deities, Wilber held that the shift was simply due to a change in agriculture that highlighted biological differences that favored male strength, making them the primary producers of food, resulting in social and public power. He stressed that there is no evidence that it was intensely ideological or exploitative, but rather seems to have been based largely on simple biological factors of strength and mobility, male advantage, and procreation and biological nursing, female advantage. He went on to say, the initial difference of function, however, could be, and in many cases was, parlayed into a difference in status, with males dominating the public slash productive sphere and women relegated to the private slash reproductive sphere. Then, this is a piece I really like to look at. There is the evolving mythological lens of the time, and through the lens of mythology, with the beginning of the Iron Age, approximately 1200 BCE, this is a quote from Woodman and Dixon. Worship of the sun god, albeit a sun god bound to the mother, to remember that, began to emerge. As consciousness developed, a sense of self began to emerge from the body self. This is the natural course of human development. As the self developed even further, human beings began to take their projections of divinity off the Great Mother and the goddess, and to identify with the ascendant symbol of the sun god. Whereas they once had taken power from nature through bone, feathers, and blood, now they sought to exert power over nature. All the powers of nature that had been an expression of the Great Mother were transferred to the sun. Humanity moved from polytheism to monotheism. Nature, in this patriarchal paradigm, was seen as something to be controlled and dominated. Virtually unchanged since its inception, this paradigm has dominated Western civilization to the present, unquote. Woodman and Dixon were careful to emphasize that the emergence of the self within this paradigm was a natural shift, according to sort of the evolution of the personal psyche through a lifetime. And then they kind of parlay that onto the evolution of human consciousness. So let me go back. They were careful to emphasize that the emergence of the self within this paradigm was a natural shift. And as a collective, we have been operating within this new selfhood for a few thousand years. Perhaps the question then becomes, what is the next evolution in human consciousness? Where are we going? We stand here at the end of an era and at the precipice of another. And we are sitting in the tension of straddling the old and the new. And I think we all feel a lot of grief, confusion, anger, frustration, sense of stuckness, not knowing where to go or put our energy. And so it has me curious about what the next evolution might look and feel like so we can start to live into it. It also makes me think, is there an overarching pattern at play here that can further explain this evolution of consciousness? I think the answer is yes. But these are the questions that I will continue to unpack and explore here. Thank you for listening to the Whole Paradox podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Molly Mitchell Hart and join us for our next episode as we continue to remember who we are together.